Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on the biggest NBA news and hear from the stars on and off the court on the Woj Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, hockey has returned to ESPN. The NHL has started back up, and that means you can stream your team's games on ESPN Plus, from the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning to the brand new Seattle Kraken. Subscribe to ESPN Plus so you don't miss a goal. Also, be sure to follow In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with Linda Cohn and Emily Kaplan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
It's exciting, man. It's almost weekend time, and I don't got no kids sporting events to go to. It's going to be a great weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's that. I hadn't thought about that. That November winded down means y'all get y'all's weekends back.
For a little bit. We start basketball in a couple weeks. I think my son's going to do some sort of lacrosse training, something. I don't know. So I got 1 weekend, and then we got birthday parties. So this weekend, we ain't got nothing on the docket, which means actually probably more work than other weekends. But either way, it's going to be nice not to have to wake up and go watch a soccer game in 45-degree weather like I did last week.
So your daughter going to be hooping? You say your son doing lacrosse?
Yeah, my daughter is going to be hooping. And my son does not like sports like basketball because he doesn't necessarily agree with the idea of a foul. Physicality is the point for him. So like you touch somebody's arm and they call a foul, he's upset. He likes lacrosse. He did lacrosse, a year ago. And he figured out pretty quickly that you don't need the ball to have fun. So at first he's trying to score goals like everybody else. Then he realized, oh, I can just hit these people. So he just running around laying people out and is just as happy. I asked him what was the score of the game. You see that hit though? It's like, all right, I guess.
Yeah, see, I got to remember you live in the lacrosse part of the world, because I feel like if I was not really trying to hoop, but I was trying to play lacrosse, my daddy would feel like he failed.
Yeah, I live in the lacrosse part of the world. We accept it. I mean, I grew up in Baltimore, so it wasn't that same dichotomy there that it is elsewhere. Like, I think other parts of the country, lacrosse is clearly what you play when you can't make the basketball team. But where I grew up, there's lots of people who look like me and were athletic like me and from the same neighborhood who play lacrosse, because they're like, you know what? This speed gonna give me a scholarship one way or another. It's a lot more competitive getting a football scholarship than it is getting a lacrosse scholarship.
Hey, let me tell you something. In these other parts of the country that you describe, it ain't really no dichotomy. We ain't playing lacrosse. Like, they play lacrosse in like 4 places. It is interesting because like when the Duke lacrosse thing happened, the next year I went to their first game of the year, which was a wild, surreal experience because it was like the return of political prisoners, basically. Like, that's the way that it was being treated. They had the smoke machine and everything. And I was like, hey, I don't really think there's anything truly to celebrate here, but like, I kind of get where you're coming from. But this is a little weird. But I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, okay, this is all right. You know what I mean? Like, I had never had no reason to say anything bad about lacrosse because I'd never watched a minute of lacrosse in my life.
Yeah, I mean, lacrosse is like all sports. Football is the weird one. Like, if you watch just about any other sport that we all watch and enjoy, they're all the same. Hockey, lacrosse, basketball. Like, it's the same game. It's a different surface, a different ball or puck, but it's the same. Football's the only one that is truly weird. Like, it is a weird game. I learned that when I went, people from other countries come here and they know that football is a big deal because you can't avoid it. And then they asked me, because of my history, like, explain football to me. And I remember the first time I tried to explain football to a foreigner, I was like, damn, this game is dumb. It's just flat dumb.
One thing that about football, now that you mentioned it, it tells you everything you need to know about how much we just like to knock the hell out of people in this country, because we ain't really too big into anything complex. And like, the first time you try to explain somebody the notion of a first down and how it works and how you get it, that's a lot.
I never thought about it like this before, but it's some real imperialist nonsense. Like, the game of football is so American because it's like, each 10-yard chunk is like another little country or colony. It's like, this is ours now. This is behind us. Manifest destiny until we get to the end zone. No other sport is like that, where you just move 10 yards, then you stop, then you move 10 more yards. Like, everyone else is just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, but not in this one. And then also smash people to get that 10 yards.
Yeah, the full imperialism actually takes place in the unorganized football, where there is a concept called loser's walk, where we march all the way down the field, we score a touchdown, and now you, defense, go the other way.
That is what we did when we was playing coming up. How come we never had make it, take it in football? It's such a weird concept playing basketball coming up, where it was like, in one-on-ones, it was always make it, take it, right? Like, that's how I always played. Yeah. It never made it to, like, if we're playing full court basketball, we didn't go make it, take it. Like, I just want to know the origin of make it, take it. It's such a weird concept that we don't do in any other sport except basketball. It's like, keep cooking, baby.
Dude, can you imagine if it was like make it, take it in the NBA? Like, we talk about them 11-0 runs now.
Ooh, man. I mean, not that there's not a premium on scorers, but and not that they don't already ignore defense until the last 5 minutes of playoff games. But can you imagine if it was like your offense, your ability to continue scored is the best defense you got? Them boys would not bend their knees, lift their arms one bit. It's just all about shooting.
We got some interesting NFL action this weekend. By the time the people have heard this, the Patriots and the Falcons will have already had their rematch of sorts, I suppose. I am seriously hoping that the Falcons get a 28-3 lead just to see what happens. But Sunday is going to get us to, we got the Cowboys and the Chiefs. We got Dak on one side. We got Patrick Mahomes on the other. We got the Chiefs looking like they getting it back together. Cowboys looking like they might be the best team in the NFL. And like, you young black folks don't understand, like, a game like this, you got to decide which brother to root for. You know what I'm saying? Like it used to be a very, very easy decision under these circumstances. What team you rooting for? They got a black quarterback? Okay, cool. We going to root for him. Not even necessarily because we like him, but we just understand what he's been through. Now we got both of them, and now you got to actually start evaluating them as actual people.
It's not just both of them. Like, the league has changed, and I'm not one who likes to use the word progress very much when we're talking about issues of race, because it seems like it's a misdirection, because there's where there might be some steps taken forward in one place, there's some steps taken backward elsewhere, and it doesn't feel like progress altogether. But I don't know what other word to use when it comes to quarterbacks, black quarterbacks in football, because it wasn't but 5 years ago when it was like a big deal to have a starting black quarterback. And then I remember having conversations with people like you where it's like, well, the real definition of real progress would be when we start to have the black backups, because that ain't nothing but a function of like relationships. And then last week, I see people popping up as backup quarterbacks that I didn't even know was in the league. Never in my life did I not know a black quarterback was in the NFL. Like, I knew them all. And like last week, I was like, PJ? Oh, I didn't know PJ was in the league. Geno Smith is the backup out in Seattle. Oh, ain't that something? It's just blowing my mind.
Yeah, like, I feel like the progress, when you think about Geno in particular, is really that he is viewed as an upper echelon backup. You know what I mean? Like, he's legitimately seen, because that's really what he is. Like, what they had Geno do start for that handful of games is what you probably could reasonably expect from him at this point. I don't know what it would look like if he got like a run to get his thing going, you know, get warmed up or whatever it is. But the idea that Geno Smith can be an upper echelon backup, that to me is the measure of progress. Now, to me, why I look at this now, and it's like, it's progress, but it's really the progress of the white man. Not the progress of us, is the black dudes that are starting right now, they're all really good, right? So, like, I'm going through it as I look at the list of teams right now. So, we're talking about Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, asterisk, Dak Prescott, Jalen Hurts kind of fits that we just figuring this out program, you know, Justin Fields, who has all the promise in the world, if nothing else. Cam Newton, who we're going to get to, though that's gotten to be kind of interesting. Then Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson, right? There really isn't much of a, like, the Ryan Fitzpatrick of African America. That part ain't happening.
The same is true of the backups, too, though. Like, there was, I was looking at a list that ranked the best backups in the league and the team with the best backup situation. is Mighty Brown near the top of that list. Like, all the backups in the league that are black are amongst the best in the league. And then you put Marcus Mariota in there, which, like, he qualifies as Brown for sure. So, but I mean, it's still shocking to have, like, Jackson pops out.
Johnson.
No, it's Johnson. Yeah, Josh Johnson pops up. And I'm like, oh, I can't even get his name right. I used to have all the black quarterbacks' name in the league tattooed on me, like, because I couldn't forget them. But it's just changed. So you're right. It's still the high end.
What get me about Josh Johnson is he's like 36, 37 years old. Right. That's the one. He disappeared for like five years. Yeah, he disappeared for years and then came back because Washington needed that starter that one time. And they were like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that dude. Just like we forgot about that dude.
That black guy didn't exist. Like, 5 years ago, that black guy did not exist. The journeyman, never starter, black quarterback. Like, you had to be Michael Vick to qualify as a backup quarterback in this league. You had to, at one point, be the number one overall pick. It's just, it's something. I don't know how I feel about it. I guess I'm happy, but it's just different.
But what I think becomes interesting about Dak and Mahomes in there is that we're obviously both of them can move. That's not really why they're there, right? Like, mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson, for example, is like, yo, he can move like that, and we can try to build up around the other stuff that he can do, right? Dak and Mahomes, they're here to throw the ball. Like, that's always been the point. Like, I would say that the reason probably Dak Prescott went in the fourth round instead of going much higher, in spite of being two-time first-team All-SEC, is he wasn't that athletic. They're like, if we're going to go get somebody who isn't that athletic, you know how many white dudes are out here that we can go get? Paxton Lynch is 6'8". You know what I'm saying? Like, we can go over there and get one of those. Like, that's what we go wind up doing. But, like, I still say with Prescott, I don't feel like people really fully appreciate that he's the second black starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Not the second black quarterback to start a game. But Quincy Carter, they tried it, right? Like, that was the plan, was for Quincy Carter to be the starter. Dak Prescott, they wound up in it. But Dak Prescott is the starter because they want him to be the starter, not because he has to start the game on the most popular team in the country. Like, that to me is huge. And then Mahomes, who we talk about like Dan Marino, right? Like, he's the first black quarterback that I felt like ever truly got discussed without exception, right? It wasn't on some yeah, but or caveat stuff until he had a bad month. And then all of a sudden, it's the, I don't know, I think they figured him out. And I'm like, damn, even he gonna get that?
Yeah, it's bad. And he's special, obviously, as a player. And he exists in this place where it feels a lot like, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen it before because he was never really discussed as a black quarterback by anyone who wasn't black. And in the past, all black quarterbacks, like even Dak Prescott, like it was part of the conversation. So it's not a complexion thing. He stood up in the Black Lives Matter stuff. Like, he spoke out. So it's not even like a political position thing. I guess the part of the country that he's from, maybe those things are, he's a little bit more comfortable in certain circles, maybe, but it just feels like, and I don't get it. I don't know why. I can't get to the bottom of it, but it just felt like his whole career, no one really talked about him like that, except for us. We was like, I used to call him LaVon all the time, his middle name, just to remind people that man's name is LaVon Mahomes, just so you know.
Yeah, like, I wonder if part of it is, partially because we know his dad was a professional athlete, he sounded, you could tell he came up with some money, right? Like, maybe that gave him an exception space in there. But you are absolutely right that all the black quarterback discussion that normally comes around, he never had to deal with any of it. And maybe it's because when he got out there, he was so on fire immediately. I don't know, but you're right, though, that even among black people, like Russell Wilson, to me, is the most interesting case on that one, because he also has not been treated for the majority of his time through the black quarterback lens. I don't know why. I don't have any great explanation for it, but he has never really quite gotten, like, he's in that Derek Jeter space where he kind of gets treated as, oh, no, we like him. He cool.
Yeah. He made a key decision in his personal life that has catapulted him, his standing in the black community. Because I do feel like it was a little bit different the way that people discussed him, because, like, I know his background, and I know that his background is very much like many black people's background. But the way that he, like, presented himself, it didn't come across as that. And I think people were turned off by that. But then he made some important decisions that were like, all right, he with us. But I think you beat me to it, but I think you're right. When we're writing or talking about athletes, we need something to grab onto. And Patrick Mahomes gave us so much to grab onto. We never, like, not we, the media complex in general, and I'm trying to give this as favorable a read as possible, not to assume like some racial bias, but the media construct in general never got around to him being black, because he was throwing with his left hand. He was doing sidearm no-look passes. They was breaking all the records, and it was just too busy saying, damn, wow. We did at the Undefeated several times point out how black he was, just to remind people, but I think that's part of it, and he has been exceptional. And another thing that I've noticed, because you and I both, I think, are quick to call out those things when we see him, like the negative racial bias. But I have noticed a lot of people complimenting Dak Prescott on the mental part of the game. And I think that normally you go to the physical part, or people go to the physical part, particularly when it's black quarterbacks. But Dak don't do nothing that is wow worthy, right? Like, he don't have a cannon arm. He's not like crazy accurate when he running. Like, he looked like he ran before, but not a lot.
Yeah.
But pre-snap, the decisions he's making, like that stuff. And I hear a lot of people pointing that out, which that does feel like some sort of, again, not progress for us, but progress for them.
Yeah. And like, you notice like the blackness comes up in cash struggle or whatever it is, or when it's time for somebody to get paid, right? Like, that's what it happens. Like with Prescott, for example, people just didn't. Yeah. Again, year 13, people still buying into Matthew damn Stafford and had their skepticism about Dak Prescott. And why does he think he's a franchise quarterback and da-da-da? And then you see they wind up giving him the money. But you know what I feel like Dak, Mahomes, and Russell Wilson kind of have in common when it's on this? Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, for example.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Even the white folks can like them, and there's plenty, obviously, that do, right? But it's like the white folks that would really like those three I gave you in the first group, they friends say stuff like this. I mean, I don't even think of him as a black guy. Like, hey, look, guys, I don't see color. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they say about those dudes. It's like, yeah, I don't see color. You can't say that about Lamar Jackson. No. There ain't no misunderstanding. He does not seem like somebody that went to your high school that you actually hung out with. No, he seemed like one of the dudes that went to your high school and live in them apartments they just built. You know what I'm
exactly.
saying? Like,
exactly.
like that. That's where they are on them. But the other cast, they can be like, yeah, man, I don't really see color.
Yeah. No, it's Cam Newton is the same way, where it's like you can close your eyes or you can read a transcript of an interview of some of those other guys and not know. You can't with Cam and Dak. I mean, with Cam and Lamar. Close your eyes and listen to them. You know exactly everything you need to know about them. It's in your face. And no matter how spectacular players they are, like the blackness from the way that they dress to the way that they talk to the references that they make to... I mean, even down to the mannerisms, like all that stuff is like steeped in a particular type of black culture that is unavoidable, that is often imitated, but never really quite accepted.
Yo, the Cam return has been so interesting to me. Because for the Panthers, it's been tough sledding since his body started breaking down, right? And last year with Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, Teddy seemed to me was doing all right until he got hurt, and then it fell apart, and then Tepper got all impatient, and then they went from there. And then they went and made a significant capital investment in Sam Darnold. Because again, the Sam Darnolds of the world, somebody thinks they can fix him, right? And then he got there, and then they realized, oh, wait, he actually stinks. And so they went and they brought Cam Newton back, and the excitement that I saw from Panthers fans was so interesting. Now, largely, it was Panthers fans that I think were already Team Cam that I saw that from. I don't know how those who weren't really responded, but I was online and I was just saying it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because he's a polarizing figure in that fan base. And I don't know, like, their affection for him is beyond the normal level of conditional that you have for athletes. And I had people popping up, oh no, everybody loves Cam here. I'm like, dog, you act like A, I ain't never lived there.
Yeah.
And B, like, I'm stupid. Because I'll never forget, I was listening once local radio in Raleigh when my buddy Shannon was producing. My guys, Joe Ovis and Adam Gold, are doing the show. And this was, you remember his second year, we had that terrible Thursday night game. And he was just up there looking like a child in the press conference and just moping and everything else. And I remember somebody called up that show, I'll never forget this. and their criticism. Yeah, he's up there standing up there in his millionaire sweater. And I was like, oh boy, we just really gave the game away here, right? Like, people down there did not know at all what to do with Cam, but I think in retrospect, they kind of look back and realize these are the best days we've ever had. Like, even that team, they made the Super Bowl in 2003. They've had legitimate Hall of Fame caliber players before that. Julius Peppers, you know, being an example, Steve Smith. They had those guys, but it ain't never matter like it did when Cam was there. Like, it mattered in a much different way, and I think they missed that.
I hope they enjoy it for what it is. Don't get your expectations up. Like, I'm sorry. I'm sure they missed it. Last weekend was fun, but I made the mistake of going in hot for Cam Newton when he was in New England. And then I watched the season, and maybe it was COVID related, but some things haven't changed about him. And one of those things is it looks like it hurts to throw the football. Like, it's not that his arm isn't strong. It's that it takes everything to throw the ball, and that's going to wear out, which, like, maybe it was the COVID that caught him when he was with the Patriots, or maybe it was the fact that it takes everything in him to throw the ball, and by the end of the season, he don't have nothing left, and he's not, I mean, he's a good runner, but he's not the runner that he once was. So when he whipped his helmet off, he yelled, "I'm back," with his dreads bounced around. It was fun, beautiful moment, but he was 3 for 4 for 8 yards passing, and I think he had, like, 12 yards rushing, and he had 2 touchdowns. Like, I don't think that this is going to be the pivotal thing in the season like they want it to be. I'm sorry.
Nah, like, the fun of it, I think, is this is the reminder that he's reached OG status, right? Like, we have to remember this. This is year 11 for Cam Newton. So you got a league that is probably over 50% of dudes who watched him play when they were in high school or college. You know what I mean? Like, so for them, like, the idea of you're playing with Cam Newton, if you some of those dudes on the team, that's the kind of thing that you dream about, right? Like, you in the locker room wanting to ask that dude for an autograph because you came up watching that dude, right? That's a whole different ball game there. And that's what I think for me has proven to be if so much fun. And it was a fun thing with the Patriots last year. Like, when he got there and you would see him, like, giving pound to Josh McDaniels or everything else, like, everything about him that was seen as revolutionary before, people came to terms with, whether it be the type of quarterback and the way he plays or just in terms of his demeanor and everything else. And so, like, you saw it in New England, like, the way Bill Belichick talks about him, love coaching Cam, great guy to have, like, all of these things. And then he winds up on this team and you just saw a shot in the arm that everybody got that, A, also speaks to his maturity, because his mood when he was with the Panthers before could go up and down, and that up and down would then ultimately affect the squad. Like, we've watched this dude grow up and become a grown-up and become an adult. And that, for me, as an older dude, is, like, the interesting part to watch in him winding up back with that team. And now the other part about this game, I'm curious your thoughts on this. So they're going to play Washington, coached by Ron Rivera, with Scott Turner's offensive coordinator, who was the last offensive coordinator that Cam played for with Carolina. And Rivera obviously was asked about Cam going down there, and he said, oh, it's a great thing. They got talent, and he fits what they want to do, which I felt like was implicitly stating he does not fit what it is that we want to do up here. And I just need him to explain to me what Tyler Heinicke does that Cam cannot do. And I say this as somebody who came into this year kind of hot on Heinicke. Like, I was like, oh, I think this might work. Incorrect. It cannot, you know, like, undrafted for a reason. But Scott Turner does not like coaching Cam Newton, right? I have been told this many times. And I think the fact that Cam Newton doesn't play for them is what makes it clear. And so I do kind of hope that Cam lights them up, just because I'm looking at Ron, like, whole reason you got the job you got right now is Cam Newton.
That's for sure. And I mean, Taylor, you call him Tyler. I call him Taylor. It's fine.
Oh, it's Taylor. My bad.
Yeah, I think you did that on Monday's show too. But Taylor is not the future of anybody's thing, as evidenced by the fact that we don't even know his name. So I don't know why you would lean in on Taylor, given the experience that you had with Cam Newton. But there's something to be said for, like, the Patriots releasing him also. There's something to be said for the personality that he is. I am not into locker rooms, but it feels like Cam Newton, and this is also piggybacks on the point you made about these guys looking up to him. I'm not in these locker rooms, but I feel like you drop Cam Newton in any locker room, it then becomes his locker room. And I'm not here to say that that's a good thing or a bad thing, but as a coach who, like any coach, who relishes control and thrives on that control, You make that compromise when you think Cam is a difference maker. You don't make that compromise when you think Cam is not going to make a huge difference. You don't bring Cam into your locker room. And that's kind of what I feel like. It's like they fear what it means to bring Cam in. It's not a legitimate fear to have because from what I understand, Cam works hard. Everybody likes Cam. Cam is a locker room glue guy. However, if you bring him in there, it then immediately becomes his locker room. And to your point, 2010 was when he put all of Auburn on his back and took him to the national championship. And then 2011, he's rookie of the year and taking the league by storm. That's like 10, 11 years ago. The guys who are in the league right now, they was 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. They are deep into their love of football back then. Those dudes idolize Cam. You let him walk up in there with that yellow, the mask suit on, he owned the locker room immediately. And I think that scares the hell out of Ron Rivera.
Dude, first of all, I think we knew that with Rivera. I don't know if you remember this game, but Cam showed up on the plane without a tie. Because you got to remember, Rivera's a military, you know, child of military people. Like, he cares about that stuff. Cam showed up without a tie, and Rivera decided he had to prove his point and that Cam was not going to play the first series. Now, the thing to me is, if Rivera's trying to maintain order, I understand that. But if Cam Newton show up with no tie, that ain't got nothing to do with anybody else. And they all know that, right? They know that the Cam rules on the tie do not apply to them. But anyway, Rivera decided to make a point and sit Cam for the first series. Actually, we wound up sitting him for the first play. And it was the first play because they put Derek Anderson in the game. And y'all who are not around North Carolina do not understand that there has been a Derek Anderson hive since the second that he got there. There was always a little undercurrent of, I mean, I think they need to go with Derek Anderson. Derek Anderson, right? It was always there. Derek Anderson walked out there. I think they were playing the Saints. Threw one pass. It was intercepted. And now suddenly Cam Newton is back in the game. And I just always think about that. Look at Ron Rivera. Like, did you prove your point, homie? All right, right. Like, did you get it? Because, like, if you think that this is going to be done and then Cam's going to be like, yo, it's my fault that Derek Anderson was out there and I let the team down. No, Cam looking at that like, I told that fool.
And everybody on the team is looking at it like, what is he doing? Don't know, because he didn't wear a tie. Now we got to start out in a hole because he ain't wear a tie. Like, if Cam doesn't show up with the tie, then everyone should take their ties off and walk. But I'm surprised that you, because, and I guess, yeah, all right, I put it all together in my head now, because I gather from what I know about your daddy, Mac Jones, is that you don't let little stuff slide. Mac Jones reminds me a bit of Mike Tomlin in that I feel like in your house, the standard was the standard. But this is a workplace, not a household. And I feel like if, let's say, in Ron Rivera's mind, this is, if he played it out all the way, he's like, all right, this is a small thing. Let me nip this in the bud to let everybody know that the standard is the standard before it gets out of control. Because if I let Cam come with no tie, next week Cam gonna wear sweatpants. Then next week Cam gonna be changing plays in the huddle. Like, that's what's happening in his mind. Right. Whether that's true or false, he thinks, all right, I'm going to give them one series, and that's a fair trade to save it from going off the deep end. But, I mean, I think that's when it comes down to being on a team, is this militaristic mindset that a lot of these coaches have, this hierarchy that they want to enforce. Like, that's not the best way to run anything. Like, what you want is buy-in. You don't want people to feel like they have to do something. You want them to want to and to feel ownership. And that requires building relationships, which is an underappreciated part about coaching a team. Like, it's not all about scheme. It's about building relationships. So if you wait until somebody don't wear a tie to drop the hammer on them, that's not as effective as, because you know what? If Cam Newton felt like his relationship was strong, he'd have either had a conversation with Ron, like, this tie thing is crazy, or he'd have wore a damn tie. Like, I feel like it's too late once you are at the point where you were making these grandiose proclamations in front of the team, trying to be, what do you call it, Timmy Toughnuts, I think is what he's trying to be. It's too late at that point.
What I say, my dad is not like a super taskmaster in that regard, right? Like, I give you a couple, like, so here's what I thought, though. If it were rookie Cam or year two Cam, now we're talking about something. I'm pretty sure this was post-MVP Cam, at which point you look like you trying too hard. You see what I mean? Like not that this guy is established. And for me on the tie thing, I get the slippery slope thing you talking about, but I imagine that whatever Cam's wearing was up to the standard of the point of the tie rule. You know what I mean? Like Cam was treating that almost like, why are you tripping on the dress code when you know I'm fly? You know, like, no, my shoes don't have hard bottoms, but they cost $1,000. Like, why are you trying to stop me from getting in the spot? Like, that's what I thought it was on that. And so, yeah, I just looked at it from Rivera's standpoint. You can go make your point. You can go talk to Cam and be like, hey, man, I got to maintain this for everybody else. Okay. I'm not trying to lean on you necessarily, but these other cats need the discipline that I'm trying to impart here. And so I need you to help me with here. But Rivera, I think to your point, never seemed to engage Cam in the way. And I guess this is kind of the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick thing, though Brady had more like built in clout already. But like me and you, we a team. Like I feel like Sean Payton and Drew Brees, because they were there the whole time together, which was the same case with Rivera and Cam. They got there the same year. We a team. It's me and you. And that's the way that Rivera probably should have handled Cam. They seem to have a good relationship, but I think the way he should have handled it from the very beginning is, let's work to build this team of me and you. Our messages need to be aligned, and this is how we're going to get the most out of this team, is if it's me and you. When I talk, they know that it's you talking.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. It's about building a relationship, but I think that's a mistake a lot of managers have, is when someone does something like this, rather than wondering what I can do differently or what I have done wrong or how I can address this situation, they're like, let me slap this dude back into shape. Like the question at that moment is like, and Rivera should have asked himself this, like, why did Cam not wear a tie on the plane? And I don't know if Rivera landed on his mind because he don't respect me. Like, you know, Cam didn't wear a tie because Cam thought he looked good. And like you are, and now Cam is taking this man punishing me because I'm fresh. How ridiculous is this? But in Rivera's mind, it's like, this man is embarrassing me in front of my team. Like, I feel like a conversation would have settled all of this, or a better relationship from the start would have settled all of this. And to your black tie point or your dress code point, I completely understand that, because I went to a post ESPYs party and a tuxedo with no tie after going to the ESPYs. They let me right in that thing. A few months later, one of my kids' friends' parents had like their birthday party at a country club. I wore the exact same thing to the country club. It was like a little rinky-dink country club in like Maryland in the outskirts of DC. I went to that country club and my same fresh-ass purple tuxedo with a black shirt with the collar open looking fly. And they was like, nah, you got to put a tie on. I was incensed. Put a tie on. I'm the freshest man here. Like, I wore this to an ESPYs party. Like, Michael B. Jordan was standing next to me there, and all these randos, like, it just felt like an unnecessary affront. Like, because the point is, the reason why you say that is like, you don't want people to show up in sweatpants and basketball shorts. I get it. I'm not in that. I look good.
But that's the thing, though, with the dress code. It ain't that they don't want people showing up with sweats and sneakers. They don't want the people that they think are showing up in sweats and sneakers to show up in sweats and sneakers. Like, that's what it comes down to. So there used to be a spot in Atlanta that was cracking called Vision. I don't know if you remember Vision, but Vision used to be the bomb, right? And so my homeboy from LA, we was going to Vision, and I think we finagled it and got in. But he was wearing some fly shoes, but they weren't hard on the bottom. And the dress code specified that, because they were obviously and clearly using every little thing they could to try to keep the riffraff from showing up and turning their classy affair into some baka baka. Like, that's exactly what they were going for. It's to keep out a certain person is what they're going for. Right, exactly. And they thought you was the element. You showed up at the country club in a tuxedo, and they're like, I don't know, that looks kind of elemental.
I felt that was the problem. When they told me to put on the tie, I almost became the element in there, because I just thought it was absurd.
That was actually what I was thinking. It's like, you think I'm that? All right, cool. Well, now I'm going to give you that. I'm going to give you that.
Buy out the bar and just pour out all the liquor on the floor.
That's what I was about to say. And then comes the next level of it. It's one thing when they do you like that and you just, you know, whoever you are just out here or whatever. It's another after you done got some money and status and you're going to be like, oh, you still going to try to play me like this, huh?
I was the most impressive in that whole building.
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, your resume strong, everything else, right? You're like, yo, who else here went to Harvard? You know, oh, nobody did.
Oh, y'all got interceptions in the league? Nah, you don't got that either. Shut up. Walk up in here, whatever.
Nah, man, they be looking for any reason. If somebody decided they keep a riffraff out, they got every reason in the world they coming up with while the establishment that you in or whatever will be riffraff free. And they never quite get it right because they the riffraff too.
I wonder if this is a hard right term, but I thought of you when I saw they changed Staples Center to crypto.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard you talk about your issues, your environmental issues with cryptocurrency. And I also, like, I don't have the same issues as you, but I remember when crypto was happening, I was in business school when it was first like starting to bubble up. And I felt like it was some snake oil flim flam. And I was like, I came here to get away from that. Like, it just seemed like, oh, we got this new money. This money that it can't be traced. It's the best new money. It's all, and you got to mine it with a bunch of computers. And some of my classmates were like, yeah, you got to get on that. They are now billionaires. But I was like, it just felt like a pyramid scheme. And maybe it is. Maybe at some point it's going to bust. But it didn't bust before they got them bees and enough money to be putting it on top of probably the most expensive naming rights. Like, because they do the Emmys there. They do all types of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, that's huge. Now, this is the thing with me about the funny money, is that you can come up, like, as an individual, if you play it right, you could come up. But, like, at its core, fundamentally, this is preposterous, right? Like, and it is, to me, a snake oil, flim-flam sort of situation. And the way that I feel confident saying that is who the people are that be trying to tell me the most about how I need to get down on it, right? Like, this is, you know, that's a big part of it. It doesn't help me with the funny money that I became aware of it when that Silk Road thing was cracking, that like open air drug market on the dark web. Mm-hmm. And it's so much was going on there. And then the whole idea, you could lose your password and lose all your money, all this stuff, people going in and their whole stuff is gone and they ain't really got no means to go and get it back. Like, all that stuff comes in when you start talking about the funny money and why I don't so much like rock with it. And that's before we get to the environmental angles of it and everything else. I don't know if you've seen this, but the mayor of Miami is trying to make Miami, like the Bitcoin city. That's what he's going for. And he's talking about how now he will accept campaign contributions in Bitcoin. And I'm hearing that. And I'm like, don't you hear what's going on here? Like, the worst thing in the world is the idea of campaign contributions being sent via Bitcoin because of all the stuff we just talked about here before. Like, look, if the mayor of Miami is trying to get you on a financial thing, no matter who the mayor of Miami is, there's a con involved because he's the mayor of Miami. So, yeah, you can donate to my campaign through these untraceable means that are a little bit shady to begin with. And not a single one of you popped up and was like, whoa.
I mean, you know why they didn't pop up is because they believe they're going to be on this ride, too. And to your point, like, maybe cryptocurrency becomes the wave of the future and this gets over the hump and whatever. But anything that only succeeds with the more people that buy in, like, that functions like a pyramid scheme. And that scares the hell out of me. And I remember, like, I didn't give the guys in business school much time. I should have, because they're billionaires now, as I said. But I didn't give them much time because as soon as they started explaining to me, like, yeah, we just got to get everybody to buy in. That ain't nothing but freaking Mary Kay. Like, that's the same. That's the same thing. Is you trying to sell this to me? So you bought all these coins. Now you want me to buy some coins. And in order for these coins to be worth something to me, I got to get everybody in the world to buy in on these coins. Like, I understand that's how money works generally. But we've been doing this for a long time. And these type of schemes pop up. And this may work. I understand all the values to it. I don't want people in my mentions because I know people are passionate about this foolishness. It ain't hit for me.
Yeah. Now, all that said, when the funny money got to cracking and I became aware of it, I did have enough money where I could have put a little down on some big. I could have gone and got me like 10 G's worth of Bitcoin, and that probably would be worth $1 million right now if I had done that. I can live with the fact that I didn't, but I do recognize there's room for a come up. I think the other part that makes it tricky with the funny money when we talk about it is the greatest missionaries for the funny money are, like, they really think this is going to replace money. Yeah. Like, they think that they've come up with something that's ahead of the game on where, like, the Fed and everybody else is, and then everybody going to have to catch up to them. Nah, the Fed was looking into this funny money before you had even heard of the funny money, like a decade or two before you'd even heard of the funny money. The Feds were already over there trying to get into it, figuring out where it's going to go. JP Morgan had already been studying it and everything else. And so people feel like, yeah, we have forced the financial establishment to come around to y'all. Nah, they was just waiting on the right time when they could figure out how there was some money to get out of this. But those ain't honorable, reputable people neither. Here's what I thought was interesting, though, about them naming that crypto.com arena, which I do have to say, I feel like is a little beneath the Lakers. Like, I do believe that they're like some of these, there's levels to this sponsorship thing, right? And so when you look up and you see like Talking Stick Casino Arena, that feels a little different than even like the Target Center. You know, like that feels a little different than a brand that you like really heard of. But these people will take money from anybody when it comes to these things. Like, this ain't no reflection. The only reflection this is the reflection of how much money crypto.com costs. I believe you and I have talked about the America First stuff in Utah. Have I talked to you about this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, right. They'll take money from anybody if they're paying it. You look at these arenas, Wells Fargo Arena. What we know about them for? Discriminatory lending. Okay, cool. The Amway Center. What we know, speaking of pyramids and the likes, right? But I mean, I get that they actually own the whole damn team. But still, we talk about the same thing when it comes to them. We can go around all these things. Ain't too many noble, honorable businesses. That's not really how it works. So, wow, crypto.com. Yeah, because they cut the check. Whoever was cutting the biggest check, AEG was going to take it from them.
Right. Yeah, that I mean, that's a signal, I guess. And I'm sure that I don't follow the crypto markets, and you and me are the same, whereas I'm super critical of this stuff now. But like I said, I wish I'd have put a dollar in when I had the chance. And now it feels like it's too late. But everyone keeps saying, oh, it ain't too late. When people are telling you it ain't too late, it's definitely too late. But anyway, yes. I think it is symbolic, though. I'm sure that whatever happened in the crypto markets, like, it's impacted by the fact that I guess the most famous, definitely the most famous basketball team, and I don't know, top five, top three most famous American sports teams. I know that they don't own the arena, but like, to be playing it, like, that means something. And that does get you a step closer. But your point is right, is part of the sale on crypto is like, it's outside of the government's control. The game is rigged, guys.
Ain't nothing outside the game is rigged,
guys. Ain't nothing outside of their control. Not the American government. They already got, yeah, they already know where this is going. They've been nuked where it was going. And you out here thinking that you about to beat them in this game. Stop it.
Nah, if they decide they coming to house your funny money is house. And they going to do it like when they house everybody else's money. They going to give you a receipt, or maybe they'll give you a receipt and tell you to go get a lawyer and try to come get this back. Nah, they going to take your funny money and be like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Exactly. I mean, you think that. And that's to your point. Like, it's all ones and zeros, and they say that they can't touch it. They can touch it. I remember I was at, I shouldn't use names on this, but anyway, I was amongst some really wealthy people, and one of the people there ran a firm that made weapons for the American government. And he was telling me about some of the stuff that they're working on that is not classified. He said that they had a radar. This was, I don't know, 10 years ago. He said they had some sort of radar system, and we were on the East Coast when we had this conversation. He said that can tell you the spin of a baseball in Giants Park, not the one in New York, the one where the Giants play baseball in California. And I was like, oh, and this is what is declassified. This is what you are legally allowed to tell me. Man, and you think you about to take down the system with some funny money.
That's my thing. They all think they so smart. You know what? You know what funny money sounds like? Why Kyrie ain't got no coin? Like, they all, like, the way they all talk about it, they all wind up sounding like Kyrie Irving. Yeah, you're right, man. You smarter than me. You, like I say, I'm not saying there ain't no come up on it, but when you start talking about the fundamentals of it and changing the world, all right, Kyrie. That is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out, theundefeated.com. Check him out on GetUp. Check him out on Debatable. Appreciate you as always, my man.
Love it, bro.
All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. Man, Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.